Hey there, it's Dan Richards. This week, we're replaying a favorite episode of ours, exploring historian and Watson professor David Kurtzer's 2022 book, The Pope at War: The Secret History of Pius XII, Mussolini, and Hitler. The book isn't just an incredible work of history, it is an absolute page-turner. If you're looking for a gripping read for these last days of summer, you should definitely check out The Pope at War. And in the meantime, we hope you enjoy this episode, hosted by Sarah Baldwin and featuring David Kurtzer. All right, on with the show.
From the Watson Institute at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Sarah Baldwin. In March of 2020, the Vatican's Apostolic Archives of Pope Pius XII, also known as the Secret Archives, were open to scholars from around the world. Historian and Watson professor David Kurtzer was one of them. And what he found is helping make clear the role that the Catholic Church and its leader, Pope Pius XII, played in World War II. Today, Pius XII's legacy is heavily debated. Some want him to be made a saint, others call him Hitler's Pope, and blame him for aiding the Nazi regime and ultimately facilitating the Holocaust. What David found is a much more complicated story. He's put together his research into a gripping new book, The Pope at War: The Secret History of Pius XII, Mussolini, and Hitler. The book contains many newly disclosed details and revelations from the Vatican secret archives, some of which shocked even a veteran historian like David.
We came across these incredible documents, which are the actual conversations that the Pope was having with Hitler's envoy.
The book is more than just the uncovering of a secret history. It's a portrait of a moment that demanded moral leadership and what happened instead in its absence. On this episode, the story of a pope at war and what it can teach us about World War II and the present. Before Pope Pius XII was Pope Pius XII, he was Eugenio Pacelli.
He was a very smart man. He was very religious. He, however, had never been the bishop of a congregation, never been even a priest of a congregation. He had always spent his life in the diplomatic service of the Vatican.
Rome and the Vatican had been at the center not just of his professional life, but his family history.
They were from what was known as the Black Aristocracy, which has to do with the part of the Roman aristocracy that had sided with the popes back when the papal states were endangered and eventually fell in the 19th century. His grandfather, in fact, helped found the Vatican Daily newspaper, which still exists today. His father had was a lawyer and become the kind of dean of the lawyers of the Vatican. And his older brother kind of took on that role as well.
In some ways, as you'll hear, Pacelli had many of the skills of a lawyer. He was good with words, highly deliberative, and ambitious.
As a very young priest, rather than be assigned some congregation, was assigned to the Secretary of State office, partly due to his own abilities, he was a very smart fellow, but also certainly due to his political connections to the Vatican. He was on the fast track early on.
In fact, Pacelli only ever had one extended period of time living outside the Vatican, in Germany.
His one main international experience is he spent 12 years from 1917 to 1929 as the papal nuncio or ambassador to Germany.
As a result, from early on in his career,
he is very close to the conservative Catholic elite in Germany. So he's not close to the Nazis, who he doesn't have much sympathy for, but he is very close to the conservative Catholic elite. So when one looks at his worldview and looks at how he views Germany, it seems very similar to a conservative Catholic German perspective.
Eugenio moved back to the Vatican after his time in Germany, and throughout the 1930s became his predecessor, Pope Pius XI's right-hand man. Pius XI died in 1939. The official cause was a heart attack, but while no one can prove it, the timing was a little suspicious. And that's because in the years leading up to his death, Pius XI
thought Hitler a pagan and an enemy of the church and was very upset to see Italy move closer and closer to Nazi Germany.
And on February 11th, 1939,
Pope was about to use a important address he was going to give to denounce his alliance with Nazi Germany, and he died the day before he could give that speech.
A few weeks later, Eugenio becomes Pope Pius XII.
And he will become Pope in March of 1939, following the death of Pius XI, at a very dramatic time. The Second World War is about to break out.
Pius XII did not pick up where his predecessor left off, condemning Italy's alliance with Nazi Germany. He takes a different approach, one that actually starts with a message from someone who is eager to get back on the Vatican's good side.
Within weeks of Pius XII being elected pope, Hitler saw an opportunity to end the kinds of criticisms that the pope's predecessor had been leveling at Nazi Germany. So he decided to send a secret envoy who would then shuttle back and forth between Hitler and the pope over the next many months. The pope secretly had them recorded, not audio recording, but he apparently had a German prelate hiding in a nearby area, an adjacent room, writing down the conversation in German. The negotiations took place in German, in which the Pope was fluent. So in the archives of the Vatican Secretary of State that they've just opened, we came across these incredible documents, which are the actual conversations that the Pope was having with Hitler's envoy.
Pius XII saw Nazi Germany as a rising power in 1939. And in these communications, he was trying to find ways to ensure that the Vatican, as well as Germany's Catholic population, would be safe from Nazi aggression. A quick pause. Here was a trail of communication between two of the most influential figures of the 20th century, which had probably never been seen before David found their records at the Vatican. Did you know what you were looking at right away?
Yes, well, yes, although I needed help with the German. But it was kind of flabbergasting. And actually, my main concern, maybe this is, I shouldn't be confessing this, but I worried that in the many months that were going to happen between when we discovered the documents, when I discovered the documents with my colleague, Roberto Benedetti, who's been working with me in those archives, that some other scholar would come across them and would quickly, you know, write them up for a newspaper or a magazine. And so I've been living for, you know, a year and a half before the publication of the book, you know, worried that somebody else was going to publish about this first, but remarkably, they didn't.
Less hidden were Pius XII's communications with Mussolini's fascist regime. It was a pretty different relationship than the one Pius XII had with Nazi Germany. That's because, despite the tension that existed between the Pope and Mussolini, ultimately,
from the point of view of the Vatican, Mussolini's government was pro-church.
Mussolini and Pius XII were, in a way, Italy's two leaders, and they needed each other. Unlike Nazi Germany, Mussolini knew he had to have the Pope on his side to lead the Italian people, which had been part of his program from the beginning.
Mussolini's government, in fact, restored many privileges the church had lost when, with the fall of the Papal States and the unification of Italy back in the 19th century. So although there were occasional bumps in the road in general throughout the fascist, we talk about the Ventennio, the 20 years of fascism, one could almost describe the state as a clerico-fascist state, a very close relationship between the clergy, the Catholic clergy, and the fascist government. So when Pius XII becomes Pope in 1939, these strong relations would remain.
These were already some complex relationships to navigate, but they became something entirely different in 1939.
Germany invades Poland and the Free State of Danzig.
And sets the stage for World War II.
Warsaw is bombed, blasted, and shelled. Poland is in ruin.
2 days after Hitler's invasion of Poland, Britain and France declared war on Germany. World War II had begun. Pius XII's reaction to Hitler's invasion of Poland, it sort of set the tone for how the Pope would navigate the entire war. On the one hand, it was clear to the Pope that Catholics were not safe under Hitler.
From Hitler's point of view, one of the principal enemies as their troops moved into Poland was the Roman Catholic clergy. So not only was Germany invading a overwhelmingly Roman Catholic country, but they were targeting Roman Catholic priests, many of whom were being sent to concentration camps.
As you could expect.
So for all these reasons, the Polish government and Polish Catholics, Polish bishops, were all calling on the Pope to denounce the German invasion.
And yet?
The Pope refused.
If the Pope wouldn't speak out to defend his people, so to speak, what on earth was he doing? You can see how some might be tempted to call Pius XII Hitler's Pope, but it's more complicated than that. So why then did he refuse to condemn this invasion?
His initial refusal, I think, was motivated by various factors. One is that he didn't want to offend German Catholics. The Catholics of Germany were very important to him. Of course, he'd spent 12 years with them. And so he thought if he were to criticize the war, criticize the Germans for invading, he would be alienating Roman Catholics in Germany. And this he did not want to do.
Pius was also concerned that if he did criticize Hitler, any German Catholics who continued to support him would be in danger of persecution or worse by the Nazi regime. And there was a third reason for his caution and silence in the face of Nazi aggression. Here's David again.
So if in the first years of the war, not only the people around the Vatican, but in fact, many, many people in Europe thought the Nazis were going to win. They had good reason to think they would, given how speedily they conquered much of Western Europe. And so in those early years of the war, let's say from 39, especially 1940, through much of 1942, the Pope was worried about how to protect the church in a Europe under German control.
In other words, in a Nazi-controlled Europe, how would the Catholic Church survive? After Poland, of course.
Spring of 1940, you have the westward invasion, the invasion of Netherlands, Belgium, France. At this point, it looked like the Nazis were unstoppable and that the church was going to have to learn to live in a Europe under Nazi control with their kind of pals, Mussolini and the Italian fascists. And so the Pope was reluctant to do anything that would antagonize the either government, either Mussolini's government or Hitler's government.
Germany's territorial expansion continued, and the acts of violence grew against political rivals, ethnic minorities, and above all, Europe's Jews. But contrary to the narrative of Pius XII being Hitler's Pope, he wasn't approving or even indifferent to this suffering. It haunted him.
For example, a little bit later on in 42, he begins having visits from a Roman priest who is a chaplain with the Italian forces and telling the Pope about the mass murder of Europe's Jews. The Pope, he would later recount, had tears in his eyes as he heard these stories. It's not that the Pope was not human or didn't have human reactions like this, but he felt he had a higher responsibility to protect the institutional interests of the church, and this is how he acted.
He also clearly was aware of what his silence could look like to people, too.
Angelo Roncalli, who would later become his successor as Pope John the 23rd, a very different pope, he meets with the Pope, and the Pope, one of the first things the Pope asks him is how he thinks people are reacting to his silence, and clearly worried about how this is being viewed.
Things get even more complicated for Pius XII in 1941 when the U.S. entered the war. All of a sudden, there are constituencies on both sides of the war that Pope Pius XII is desperate not to alienate.
He relied on financial support from the Catholics in the United States. The principal financial support of the Vatican was coming from the U.S. and had been for a number of decades by this point.
But on the other side of the war were, of course, not just German Catholics, but all of Italy. It was also becoming more and more clear that he couldn't simply remain silent.
So he engaged in what I would think of something as a double game, because as head of the Catholic Church in Italy, he was presiding over clergy that was supporting the Axis War. But as supreme pontiff of all the faithful worldwide, he was taking this position of neutrality.
The most visible examples of this double game.
So one of the things I show in the book is how he carefully labored on his speeches to see that there would be pieces of them that could be cited by each side.
The Pope's public remarks during the war were dense, confusing, vague, and intentionally so.
He comes up with phrases that can be interpreted in different ways. He talks about the need for a new world order, for example, which, you know, is a term that was used by the Nazis and the fascists for what they were doing. But of course, the Pope could deny that that's what he meant by using these terms.
Another example. In 1942, the Pope gave a Christmas radio address that disparaged Marxism and socialism. The remarks were read by fascists as a sign the Pope was on their side. But buried on the 24th page of his address, he lamented the hundreds of thousands who, because of their race, were, quote, condemned to death or progressive extinction, something the Allies could read as a condemnation of fascism.
Today, it's not difficult for defenders of Pius XII, who see him as a heroic figure, to say, oh, look at, you know, this comment that he made in some speech that obviously was critical of the Nazi cause. But at the same time, the Mussolini and Hitler and so on and their minions were able to point to other things the Pope said that they could point as showing that the Pope was in their corner.
Poland's ambassador summed up a feeling many people seemed to have at the time about Pius XII.
Due to his sensitivities and delicate nature, the character of his studies, and a certain one-sidedness of his career, exclusively diplomatic and far from real life, cannot speak to a different language and passes by the realities of our time, not realizing how little an average Catholic can understand and remember from his enunciations.
Although maybe he did know how little people could understand his long, dry speeches. Making them hard to follow allowed him to get away with saying contradictory ideas or sometimes nothing of substance at all. In 1943, Allied troops landed in southern Italy and began their advance north to the rest of Italy. The war was entering its bloody final stages. U.S. troops advanced toward Rome.
And in early September 1943, the Italians announced their armistice with the Allies. Therefore, they're no longer going to be allied with Nazi Germany.
You might think that this would have been the time for Pius XII to choose a side in the war and unequivocally condemn the acts of Nazi Germany. But he did not. Once again, there were multiple reasons for his silence. First, the one thing, maybe the only thing, the Pope unequivocally opposed, the rise of communism and the Soviet Union. Unlike fascism, Pius XII saw communism as an existential threat to the church. There was no compromise to be made.
It did appear to the Pope and others that the Allies now were more likely to win the war. But now the main allies were not only Britain and the U.S., but also Soviet Union. The Allies kept calling for the unconditional surrender of Nazi Germany. And the Pope was worried that unless he could help bring about a compromise peace, which the Allies kept rejecting, that if they just demanded an unconditional surrender, Germany would be reduced to rubble, and this would all advantage the Soviet Union.
But as was always true with decisions made by Pius XII, there were multiple interconnected factors at play. And at this moment, there was still one major factor trumping all others. Hitler controlled Rome. After feeling betrayed and angered by Mussolini's siding with the U.S.,
Hitler then sends the troops flooding down from the north through Italy and takes over much of the Italian peninsula, including Rome. So beginning in by the middle of September 1943, Rome is being occupied by German troops, who, by the way, respect Vatican City.
As in, they don't invade or occupy it.
But they're occupying the rest of Rome.
This also meant that the crimes against humanity that Nazis were perpetrating across Europe had now come to the Pope's backyard.
About a month after the Germans occupy Rome, the Gestapo were sent in, and on October 16th, 1943, they succeed in rounding up over 1,000 Jews who will be a couple of days later sent to their, mostly sent to their death at Auschwitz.
At this point, pleas were coming in from rabbis, from families of abducted people, from international leaders, for the Pope to condemn the actions of the Germans. The Pope, in characteristic ways, used back channels, diplomatic language, and vague calls for compassion to try to end the violence. It didn't work. With each month, the odds of Germany winning the war shrank, and yet the Pope continued his silence. At times, Pius XII seemed to come awfully close to even sanctioning Germany's activities in Rome. Perhaps the starkest example, in 1944, a group of Italians opposing Nazi occupation exploded a bomb in Rome, killing dozens of German officers. That led to what would become known as the Ardeatine Massacre.
Hitler vowed that 10 Italians should be executed for every German soldier who died. So there were 36 victims in terms of the German soldiers. They ended up rounding up 365. They got five more than they needed and took them out to caves outside, just outside Rome. Scores of these 365 victims were in fact Jews from Rome. The others were kind of political prisoners, so a lot of them tended to be younger men and middle-aged men. But the Jews who were killed included old people, young children. They basically had a gun put to their back of their head and shot. And then they exploded the cave to cover up their crime.
Pope Pius XII's reaction to this massacre?
The next day, the Vatican newspaper had an article of denunciation. But what they denounced was not the murder of the 365 civilians, but the fact that the partisans had killed the German soldiers. You know, at the same time as the Allies were leafleting the Italians, calling them to rise up against the German occupiers, the church was taking the opposite position, continuing to use all their influence to prevent any kind of resistance in Rome, saying that it would only lead to further violence.
The story of Pope Pius XII and World War II obviously goes far deeper than we can cover in this podcast. To really understand it, you'll have to check out David's new book. But let's move forward a little in time. So, of course, World War II ends in 1945, and Germany's atrocities become more fully known to the world. The Holocaust becomes history's clearest example of a red line for humanity, something we should simply never have tolerated under any circumstances, something which Pius XII, along with millions of people around the world, were able to. Today, Pius XII has many defenders inside and outside of the Vatican, and David can understand some of their arguments in his favor.
If one wants to judge him by his success in protecting the church, I think he has to be regarded, his experience during the war, as a success. The church came out of the war pretty strong position, certainly did not have the kind of schism with Germany that he so much feared. The Germans certainly could have easily taken over the Vatican City. They could have easily kidnapped the Pope. If his defenders simply said, look, he was facing very difficult choices. The future was very difficult to predict. He had good reason to believe he was going to have to protect the church in a Europe dominated by Nazis. He certainly didn't like the Nazis. He wasn't happy about this development. One could kind of paint a picture there. We could see, one could understand this.
But many of Pius XII's supporters don't stop there.
His defenders paint this picture of a heroic, courageous Pope who takes great risks to save hundreds of thousands of Jews of Europe and so on. And this is just so far from the actual fact of history that I think it's impossible to let that stand, that any serious historian is going to find the need to write a more accurate history of this.
David's portrayal of Pius XII, informed by many letters, memos, and documents never before seen by historians, is a huge step forward in understanding the man and the moment. And as David puts it, the question of Pope Pius XII's actions and words isn't just a story about one man or even just about the Catholic Church.
For me, one of the moral issues here is How was the Holocaust possible?
No one can know if Pius XII could have actually helped prevent such tragedy, the effect his actions and words could have had. It's a tale of moral leadership we'll never know, and can only learn from, in this case, by its absence. And blame is even more deserving for members of an institution like the Catholic Church, which for centuries had helped ostracize the Jews of Europe.
Centuries of demonization of Jews by the Church, and not just the Catholic Church, but of course Protestant churches too, play a major role here. And if you ask who it is who were doing the murdering, they weren't pagans, or at least they weren't people who thought of themselves as pagans. They were people who thought of themselves as Christians. More or less half of them thought of themselves as Roman Catholics. The Church bore some responsibility. Obviously, there were other factors too, but bore some responsibility for the vilification of Jews that made the Holocaust possible. So it's in this context that the Pope's silence, not only, by the way, during the war, but even after the war, he never talked about any such responsibility of the Church for vilifying Jews. It's important for us to understand how the Holocaust happened and how it could have been permitted to happen. So from my point of view, this is a history we need to confront.
A history that for decades was partially buried in the Vatican's archives, and which, thanks to David Kurtzer, we can finally see more fully. This episode was produced by Dan Richards and Kate Dario. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. I'm Sarah Baldwin. Trending Globally is a podcast from the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs at Brown University. You can find all our episodes by subscribing to Trending Globally wherever you listen to podcasts or on our website. We'll put a link in the show notes. And if you like the show, help spread the word. You can leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or just tell a friend about us. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.